at this time to skip item 18 and move to item 19, which is our executive officer report and a little bit of elaboration on some of the questions that Mr. Johnston had.
So I just wanted, there are only a couple things I want to point out. You do have the irrigated lands update in there, and there's also a good piece on the Healthy Watersheds web report card. And at some point, we'll have Karen Worcester come and give the board a brief dog and pony show on that. She went to the state board and spent, I think it was like 3 or 4 hours speaking to about 50 people up there. And she also gave staff here a presentation. I think, Mr. Chair, when you and I were had to go to the nitrate task force, the panel, so we weren't able to participate. So we will fit her in at some point in the future. And then finally, the Salinas River management update. Jennifer did a very nice job, and it'll give you a good sense of the progress that all the parties are making. I think we're very satisfied at this point that progress is being made, and we'll continue to provide you updates as we move forward. And that's really all I wanted to cover, unless there are any questions.
Mr. Johnston had some specific questions, which I referred to this agenda item.
Yes, and I did actually go back and realize that while I was reading this binder in bed, I must have closed my eyes for that paragraph or two, and that it was covered in here. I do have a question, though. I'm just trying to understand how the process works. The State Board ordered that certain discretionary executive officer decisions were appealable to the regional board by any member of the public and petitionable to the state board. I think in order to avoid a merry-go-round of that stuff, the executive officer is bringing things that would normally fall within his purview, like a couple of things we talked about today, to the regional board to get staff direction before approval. So I'm just trying to understand then, let's say the decision that we just made, I've got counsel grinning at me over there, but the direction which we just gave to the to staff, which was that we were fine with staff giving the 90-day extension on the southern area second round of well testing. So I guess the process from here is going to be that the executive officer will then presumably exercise his discretion to make that decision. And then help me out here, counsel, if some of the parties in this room are displeased enough with that decision to want to move on it, do they, first, how do they know? Second, do they then take it back to us, even though we gave staff direction, before they take it to the state board? I want to understand how it works, and I think there's probably people here that want to understand how it works.
Well, the first question is, what happens next? The EO, Ken Harris, will follow your direction and approve an extension, and he will do that in a letter that will be public, and it will be, everyone will have public notice of that. So if any party disagrees with it, they will have 30 days from the date of that letter to petition it to the state board. They also have the right to request the regional board to review that decision. It is up to the regional board to decide whether they want to rehear it. I do believe the hope was by having the item heard today, it would cut down on any sort of a need to rehear the item. But they can make the request, and then the board chair can decide on whether he wants to approve such a request.
So then, even though the process laid out by the state board is that discretionary decisions of the executive officer, certain discretionary decisions of the executive officer in respect to this matter can be taken to the regional board for review and then petitioned to the state board, they don't have to take it back to us for review, which would admittedly be somewhat of a foregone conclusion given the discussion today. They can go straight to the state board should they wish to petition it?
They can always go straight to the state board if they wish to petition it, and in fact, they must do so within 30 days regardless of whether they've asked the regional board to act. So in cases where they would like the regional board to review a decision, they should petition first and then place it into abeyance while the regional board reviews the decision.
But they're not required to ask the regional, because if I wanted to argue about this decision, I would feel like I was wasting my time taking it to the regional
board.
They
are absolutely not required to, and the regional board is not required to accept the request.
And I'll be quite honest, my intent of doing this through this process was basically to cut the middleman out, and I did not want to, given how controversial these issues are, my concern is given what the state board said, no matter what I do these days, it's likely to be petitioned to you folks. I decided, why even bother? I'm just going to bring it to you for direction, and then if they're either party, any side, doesn't like the direction you've given me in my subsequent action, they can go directly to the state board.
Frankly, on something as time sensitive as this, that's probably totally appropriate.
Yes, Ms. Young.
Are we each free to jump around in the EO report, or are we sticking on one item?
You can. You can ask a question now. Sure.
Yeah, but on. Okay. I didn't know if you were wanted this done a certain way.
I think right now we basically have clarified
that
Mr.
item.
John's that
okay.
item.
So
there is also, before I forget, Mr. Shemek had a 2-minute request for this item 19. I assume that still applies. So I'd like to hear from him, and then we'll hear your comment.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Steve Shimmick, the Otter Project. I have two very quick issues. One is, I did read the executive officer's report, and I found the report on this discretionary stuff less than satisfying. And the reason is that it deals with the issue of the groundwater management plan is simply, well, we approved one, and we didn't approve a couple more. It's much more nuanced than that. If you approve a program and then you iteratively change it over the course of that program, and we don't know what those changes are, and we don't, that is substantively changing the program, and I feel that we have the ability to know that, and I feel that the state board gave us permission to have that information on the groundwater issue. Done with that. Second issue, and this is a new issue to you, and hopefully I can do it quickly. It's the website changes for CCAMP. And here's the issue and the problem. The problem is that the CCAMP website is part of the record for the regional board decision on the ag waiver. As you know, that decision has now gone to the state board, and the regional board record is now part of the state board record, and the Otter Project and others have brought a lawsuit against the state board over that decision. We currently do not have access to all the CCAMP data because just due to timing, the CCAMP data site has gone down with only up to 2009 information on there. So we cannot access what constitutes a major part of the record for our lawsuit. So here's my point. I'm bringing this to your attention because the executive officer's report says Well, sometime this summer, we'll have it up and running. We really need access to what constitutes the record for that state board case. That case is scheduled to go to trial this fall. And not having that piece of the record is huge for that trial date. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comment, Jessica?
Regarding what?
Regarding the ORCAN, regarding the CCAMP and the access to information.
I am actually not, since the lawsuit's with the state board, I am not really involved in it. So I...
Let me ask this. If it was part of the state board record, isn't it in print or on a digital file?
No, it is not. It simply refers to the CCAMP website and says, I can't think of verbatim what the sentence is, but it's a two-liner that basically says the CCAMP information is considered part of the record.
So the date, maybe Michael or Lisa wants to talk, make a comment on it, but... you know, databases are dynamic. They do get updated. They go through reprogramming. And I know that that staff are working very hard to make it much, much more user-friendly, but to provide greater functionality and that kind of thing.
Right.
And so it's, you know, right now they're going through a reprogramming aspect. So.
Right. So what I'm saying is that I'm appreciative of the upgrade. It just couldn't have come at a worse time for us. And the problem is that literally the visualization is the important thing, right? Because the CCAMP database has been characterized to me as containing millions of lines. And so without the visualization, the raw data is frankly almost impossible to deal with. So it's the visualization that is really important, and the visualization does not exist right now.
Yeah, and unfortunately also our programmer had an accident and I believe broke his shoulder or arm and is unable to code.
Yeah, I'm simply bringing it to your attention and saying as we move longer into the future, it's going to become more and more of a critical issue for us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I will talk to Karen Worcester on Tuesday, Monday's a holiday, and ask her if there is a way that we can get the information that Steve needs, get it to him in some form. Although it's not available online to the general public, we may be able to produce it in some other manner.
Okay, and I have one more speaker card from Kenya Acevedo, in regard to this item 19, and this should conclude all the speaker cards for this item 19, and then I will entertain, a little wrap up from the rest of the board.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to comment. I just wanted to inquiry. I think it was pretty clear that, for example, today's item was going to be publicly noticed. It was going to be online, readily available for the 30-day period to be able to petition and things of that matter. I think my questions and concerns relates to previous decisions that were made at some indeterminate time. Presumably, those 30 days have long lapsed. So, for example, the tier changes of approximately 130 growers. What's the standard approach for being able to review those? How much time will there be to review 130 decisions? And how does that conflict with our right to challenge those decisions, given that those 30 days might have already lapsed? Thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Mr. Johnston.
I was just going to ask if Mr. Harris had any comment on the first item that Mr. Schimmick raised, which was iterative changes to the groundwater monitoring program and notification of the public so that they could, should they choose, either petition them or bring them to the board for review of your decisions. And I know that the executive officer's report specifically says that we're going to post a list of tier changes so that people have, presumably the clock will start running once we post it. Are there other iterative changes that, and if so, what's our mechanism for letting people know about them?
You know, I can't go, it's a very dynamic program and there's a lot going on. I can't, everything, any kind of major changes we've brought before the board in terms of, you know, we've been doing every single board meeting, we've been doing a progress report or update to you folks. So anything major would have been incorporated in those, and that included written staff reports. I'm going to look at Angela. I can't think of anything that has been done that was not publicly announced. So we are working, and maybe Angela could comment on that, of putting up a list of potential decisions that, and not all of them have been made, that would be petitionable consistent with the state board's order.
And Angela? I assume that the time that the clock would start running on that once that's posted.
Legal?
I'm getting another smile over there.
That is something that I believe the state board has not clarified. I would say for any party that wishes to petition any of the decisions that we've made, they should, once it is on the website or they've received public notice, that they should do so within 30 days and include when they received notification. But the state board has not been very forthcoming on what they will do with those petitions.
So Angela Schroeder, Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program Manager. Just to follow up on what Ken said, related to the cooperative groundwater monitoring programs, I think it's accurate to say that all the major decisions have been brought before you. So for an example is the approvals, the denials of the couple that we denied, some of the big changes that we imposed upon the programs as a requirement condition of their approval, those all came before you. Another example is the proposed changes today. And then forthcoming in July, we'll be having another discussion that we've been talking about informally with them, the drinking water notification process, and that will come before you. An example of things that haven't come before you, I would say that they're more the minor day-to-day changes in formatting of reports and things like that. So I'm not sure that that's the level of detail that you want in front of you. I do think it's probably worth clarifying how things like this letter that we're going to send to the coalition approving the extension. So is there a way that we should make that more publicly available out to LIRIS or certainly CCing the interested parties? Or is it sufficient just to bring it to the board? So that might be something you might want to provide some direction on.
Yes, it should be on it with the LIRIS list.
Okay, so the mm-hmm. the letter that yeah. goes to the coalition.
We should, I believe we're already in the process of doing this, but there, with the Irrigated Lands webpage, there should be a subtopic for EO discretionary decisions. We'll link any letters or decisions when those happen. We will also send them out to the LIRIS list for anyone interested.
Right. So we had a plan to post them on the website for sure.
Hold up. Thank you. And I know Mr. Young had a question, and then Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Dr. Wolf. This has to do with the 401 CERT program. Is Kim here? Okay. So what I'm curious about is in staff's review of these applications, are we looking at compliance with, say, stormwater LID requirements that we have in our stormwater permits?
Yeah, this is Phil Hammer. I'm the supervisor for the 401 unit and stormwater unit. And yeah, we do look at compliance with basically requirements that are necessary to protect water quality, because when we issue a certification, we're certifying that the project is in compliance with water quality standards. And so that would include things like post-construction requirements for low-impact development, even things like erosion control in the construction phase. All those types of requirements are reviewed during the 401 process, and it's actually a really good way to learn about how the municipalities are conditioning projects.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we will look at a project and it won't have any post-construction requirements that have been applied to it, and then we can go back to the city and use that information to talk to the city and ask, you know, learn about why that happened.
I'm glad to hear that. And by post-construction, you mean those permanent devices that are going to be built into the project that are going to go long-term to keep water on site or to facilitate infiltration?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, when these projects come through, we're basically looking at them for compliance with the post-construction requirements that this board adopted for
right.
the whole region.
Good, okay. Thank you. And then I just wanted staff to know, actually, Karen Wooster, she's not here, but I like what I'm reading about the Healthy Watersheds web report cards, and I'm glad to see you guys have been busy, because we haven't had anything really before the board in a couple of years talking about this, and this is kind of a big vision item that we've been working on for many years. So I like what I'm reading here on this page 5 and 6. So keep up that good work.
Thank you. And Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple items to comment on here out of the ED report, and then a couple more items that aren't in there, but I think this is the only spot for them. So I'll just beg your indulgence and not to be penalized for earlier transgressions of time.
You are totally forgiven.
Thank you. So the issue on public notification on changes and what constitute what type of changes, does moving a grower from a higher tier to a lower tier fall into that category of public notification?
Yes.
And have we done any of those?
We're working on it.
Okay. So this kind of just points up to me my same kind of response when we talked in the pre-briefing about item number 11, about staff's ability to write a report that sort of tells the whole story. The paragraph in the staff report on discretionary review talks nothing about whether we have or have not moved people from a higher tier to a lower tier. It only talks about that we haven't moved people from a lower tier to a higher tier. I think probably the stakeholders that are concerned in this process really don't care that we're moving people to a higher tier. They would probably applaud that. But they really want to know is, have we made any decisions that move people down to a lower tier? Yes or no? Is that zero? Is that whatever the number is? And obviously there's an answer there that I think should be in the staff report without being asked. I mean, that seems to be the crux of the issue. On item number 11, when we did the pre-brief, I was, I think, blessed to be on the same phone call with Bruce, and we both had questions and concerns about that. Mine were concerning the dollar amount spent on an end-of-pipe resolution rather than a preventative resolution before I got there, and Bruce's was regarding funding an ag process that should have been built into the ag accommodation. And I would characterize my perspective as a result of that meeting as basically being run off of participating in public comment for today's in comment for today's action, that it was going to remain on consent and we should get it out of here. And the result of that was I sat politely and listened to 45 minutes of other people commenting on that item. So I would respectfully say to you that we need to do a better job of walking across the of staff or management walking across the street and looking at the project from across the street rather from internally. That questions that are being asked, in my perspective, should either be asked in public whether it's a consent item or not, or those type of questions should be answered in advance if you want to put them on the consent docket. One other item on this particular report, too, is I see that the return of the direction that was given in January in regards to the drinking water notification is going to happen in July in Santa Barbara, and I have some heartache with that. I would pose to you that the by far the greatest problem and the greatest number of stakeholders are in the northern section of the region, not the southern section of the region, and it places a hardship on that group either to participate or actually get down there to offer their response to what we're going to hear. And so I think that it's either the wrong month for it or that's the wrong month to be in Santa Barbara, that one of those two changes should be made to the schedule. And then finally, not in the report, I would characterize public comment as out of control. Okay, and I would suggest that we talk about that at next meeting's lunch meeting. I think that would be an appropriate place to talk about. You don't like lunch meetings? No? Okay, well then I would suggest that that come back to the board for an agenda item to talk about public comment and the way to handle public comment and what an agreement amongst us all as to what we're willing to put up with in public comment or what we're not willing to put up with in public comment and come to a consensus, and then we can all participate on that consensus rather than watching public comment devolve into a long process where then an admonition from the chair is when we get to the end of less public comment is we each have a little bit of time to respond to it. You know, if I wanted to talk about McDonald's at the end of public comment, I was admonished that there was only going to be a short time, whereas people had 20 or 30 minutes to talk about items at the start of public comment. And I think that's unfair to all the board members. And just philosophically, I think public comment is comment, and we need to get a grasp on what comment means and not back and forth. Really, the only response I'd appreciate hearing about today is my question on the July meeting and the appropriateness of having it in that location for the water notification item.
Can I touch base on all of them?
Oh, you could. Okay. No pressure.
Okay.
As chair, I do give authorization to or EO to respond.
So consent items, as I've mentioned to a couple of people, it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. At the state board, we went through cycles where the board didn't allow consent items because it seemed like everything was controversial, and then it just bogged the meetings down, and so they said, okay, let's start the consent process again. And it's really intended if we have routine items like permits and things where we get no public comments, there's no objection during the notice period, you know, it's a very efficient process to stick them on the consent calendar so that you all can get through them and approve them, and we can move on to the more difficult items. We try to do our best to anticipate what questions that you might have, but you know, we like I said, I'll just leave it that we do our best. So I don't have an answer on for consent on what to do. Like I said, there, for the most part, if there's no one objects, there's no letters, it's routine, we put it on consent.
One suggestion I would have is that you actually break those out in prior to discussion, is that you ask the board who wants to talk about a particular item, and you talk about those items in order. Today what happened is one person would talk about item 8, one person would talk about item 12, another one would talk about item 10, then the next person would talk about item 8 again. And I think it would be my suggestion that at least if we're going to go through that process, that we group the agenda items together so that we all have a shot at them when they're happening and not have to come back and remember what was talked about a half hour ago about that particular item.
I agree with you, and I think it's for the boards to decide. I think the process you laid out is perfectly reasonable. I would just caution the board that, you know, if you keep consent items, it's certainly your prerogative to pull them off. Just recognize if you pull them off and you start these conversations that the days are going to get long. You know, they're going to be long days. I just a caution, but I think, Mr. Chair, I think that's perfectly reasonable. Is at the beginning of the consent ask, are there any items that people want to discuss? And if there are, we pull them off and we take them in the order in which they're taken off. I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Mr. Delgado?
Oh, I'm not done yet. I've got two more items. I'm sorry. The other one had to do with the item that is going to be in Santa Barbara that pointed out has to do with more with the northern part, and maybe we should consider changing the venue so that it's not in Santa Barbara, but it's up north. What that means is we could cancel, there's still time, we could cancel the Santa Barbara meeting. We would have to, of course, the issue is we'll have to find a venue in, say, for example, Salinas, and these venues, they fill up pretty fast. We build these calendars at the beginning of the year, but we could do that, or go ahead and hold the Santa Barbara meeting, take that off and move it to September. The only problem with that is, again, we have to find a venue, but it also delays the time in which we would make any changes to the manner in which the coalition is making their reports and, you know, the consistency between the way they deal with contaminated wells and the way we deal with contaminated wells, which I know is something that everybody wants to get to. So, but that's a board decision. You all have to provide us direction.
It's not an option also just even to move that date here? I mean, that saves some people 4 hours of travel time, 2 hours down and back.
Sure, we're here in September, so you could move it to September if the board so
choose. No, I'm saying move the July meeting to San Luis Obispo. That could be one of the options too.
Right? That's one of the options. Okay. Yes, it is.
Mr. Harris, could I point a clarification? So the human health exposures associated with nitrate aren't exclusively part of the northern part of the region's problem. They're throughout the region. Santa Barbara area, Santa Maria area have those problems too. The environmental justice community is more robust in the northern part of the region, and so you hear from them more. And I don't want to disrespect, I think the point you're making is let's make it easy for them to participate. But I just want to be also clear that the water quality impacts exist throughout the region, and the risk to drinking water exists throughout the region.
Okay. The final one on public comments, just some suggestions for the board's consideration is, what I would suggest is during public comment, if there is a particular issue that board members are going want to discuss in depth, they should alert the chair. And I think the board should make a decision that either staff bring it back as an information item for discussion or as an agendized item at the next meeting. I think that way you give the item the appropriate amount of time. It also is fair to staff so that staff has all the information in front of them and they prepare to answer your questions. A lot of these just take a lot of discipline on the part of the staff, on the board and the chair to enforce them. But I think that would be a reasonable solution also to public comment. Let people comment. If there are items you want to dig into further, we could bring it back at a future board meeting. Those are my three comments. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Delgado?
I just want to say thanks for the staff's progress working with the grower shippers on the trash issue of the Salinas River. That is how they know that no permits are needed for removing trash by hand, but there's still some work that's needed to remove trash using heavy equipment or mechanized equipment. And also, it's good news to hear that there's progress on removing the Arundo from the river, and I hope that the demonstration project work with TNC and the Resource Conservation District proceeds, though I see that there's some Section 7 consultation delays. But just good work on that, and I'm really happy to read in the EO's report that the Pinto Lake has the approved funding of $750,000. I didn't know that earlier when I made a comment about Pinto Lake, but that's great progress. Thank you.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Chair Wolf. I wasn't going to comment on this, but I just want to respond to Mr. Jordan, just a couple of points. The two items that we did engage in dialogue on today had time sensitivity to them. So sometimes things come up in public comment where we know that if we don't parse it out a little bit and we consider what the timeline is for me being able to engage or be responsive to a particular issue. That's part of what public comment involves. We must recognize, and I hope we'll have the discretion to know when we need to, as a board, consult each other in how we want to move forward with something that has a timeline to it. Certainly Land Conservancy was one of those issues. If we put it off, we would not be able to encourage them to consider that there is a potential we could help them meet a $2 million match on an important project. So enough on the time sensitivity. Los Osos, again, urgency there that just piles up. So that's my view on that. I hope we hold public comment to brief input. That's what it's for. But sometimes we do need to discuss. On the discretionary items issue, I looked at the website, and there are a couple things there that I didn't see that I thought I would see. So let me just make a quick comment, Angela. I see that there is a little, great little icon. It says, if you want to receive Irrigated Ag Program updates by email, please subscribe. So I don't know what kinds of information you do distribute by email, if that includes numbers of changes in tier. I'm sure you don't send out names in farm by farm, but if you sent out emails saying something that, you know, in the month of May, staff or the EO determined the following number were changed from one tier to another tier. I don't know if that's the kind of thing that goes out, but perhaps that's another way to trigger inquiry to the appropriate staff by those who are on the interested list. The second thing that I don't see here that I thought would be here, which is what's new. Many of our web pages have a little kind of a blast of a star thing, looking thing, and it says what's new. And that would give you the latest, the very latest decisions either by the board or staff or the EO in terms of the changes that fall under his authority. And the last thing that I don't see here is this web page last updated. That does not tell us how old this information is. So I would make those, put those on your list to figure out if that's a possibility. My last comment is just another formatting thing. I love tables. I love a single page view or at least a more evenly presented view. Mr. Johnston, I believe, or Mr. Young, asked about compliance with LID. I would love to see on the 401 cert table a real skinny little column that says LID and a check. And then that would also give us a sense of how many of our projects fall into any kind of LID regulation or conditions rules. And that way the board could pursue those questions so that we can better understand how effective, how successful, how easy, how hard, et cetera, what kinds of things we're seeing done because they are, you know, falling into regionally characterized very differently. We understand those differences are hard and challenging. So I think that would be another way for us to show some progress. That's it.
So to try to improve board meeting management, one thing we had discussed previously was when a single board member requests that staff expend resources to do things that I would ask the chair for direction and the chair would solicit from the rest of the board whether they concur with that board member's request. So I would ask that now, Mr. Chair.
And just to be clear, I am careful. I try to always make it in the form of a suggestion, not a direction, because I am not the chair.
So is this a major time-consuming request?
I think we can easily make the changes that Dr. Hunter suggested to the website.
Putting
last updated, the list of discretionary items and then what's new section.
Okay.
Because those are things that existed prior. There just hasn't been a lot of new things up until recently.
Okay, so it's basically doable. All right, so the direction would be?
Lisa probably wanted there, comments on the 401 aspect.
Yeah, exactly, on the 401 table. I wasn't actually sure if you're asking for, so the projects themselves that we're certifying are not necessarily LID projects in entirety, right? You just want to know, based on what Phil Hammer was saying, if they're complying with our post-construction requirements and implementing LID, and we're considering that as part of the certification. Okay.
If there's any way in which the project triggers post-construction or other elements of LID, that if it's checked and somebody wants to know more about it, that gives us the opportunity to see it. Yeah. Otherwise, it doesn't show in the project title or the project purpose.
Yeah. I think that's doable. If when I talk to staff, it actually is a little bit more process-oriented or process-intensive than I'm aware of, then we'll come back and let you know or make an alternative suggestion, but I think we can do that.
Find this to be very time-consuming, come back to us at the next meeting and give us the feedback. So is that clear, Mr.
Yes, Harris? Thank you.
Right.
If I could just clarify one thing that Jessica mentioned in terms of timing for the discretionary items, so our plan is to have those up on the web by the end of this month, so just within the next couple weeks. And also in terms of tier review requests, I wanted to provide a little bit of context that there's of those 130, 90% of those happened like immediately right after the order. So growers had corrected information in the ENOI. They didn't actually use the pesticides, but had changed that identification on their notice of intent. So those are happen sort of right after. And then we have about 13 or so that have spanned the more recent weeks and months. So we'll provide an explanation about those.
Okay, thank you, Jessica. Next, and then Mr. Thomas next.
Before we get into further board discussion, it would be better if the board wants to discuss consent items or public comment, if they do that during an agendized item in a future board meeting, and that way they can discuss, we can have something on board meeting management or board procedures, and that way everyone knows that it's coming and you can have a full discussion without anyone getting cut off.
Mr. Thomas.
I just wanted to say that some of the stakeholders are saying they're not aware of the changes that are being made. So whatever it is we're doing to inform people isn't working for them. So next week we'll be talking about how to make sure we inform people. And we'll go look at the changes that have been made and figure out how to make that information available to the public.
Thank you. Mr. Johnston.
Just two short things. In terms of the question of taking up the health impacts of nitrates at the Santa Barbara meeting, that's a function of the level of nitrate pollution and ag in our region. It's more predominant in the north, but very much extant in the south. We are dealing with ag issues at every single board meeting. I think it's a good policy to move our board meetings around. I think while we try to be considerate about taking up issues that are very local at the appropriate meetings, I don't think that's a very local issue.
Yeah.
And frankly, in term, just my two cents on consent, I think that if there's anything that board members want to discuss on consent items, they should simply pull it off rather than us spending an hour on consent. We just pull it off and we talk about it. Or the board member can ask their questions before the meeting.
Okay. My kind of parting remark is that we have a very engaged board, and meaning that everyone in the board, I'll think. Gives very deep consideration to for a subject, and inherently that creates a lot of discussions and sometimes sub-questions. Yes, there's room for improvement, but I think, personally, I'd rather have a very engaged board than a board that goes through a Olympic race of trying to cover items in very short time. I think there's also an importance of, you know, the democratic process we have of being engaged with a community and listen to what I have to say. And I think that's very important. I think it's easy from our perspective here to say, gee, why is it this taking so long? And just move on. People come on their own time here. You know, they take time away from their family. And I think we owe to them the proper time. And once in a while, as Dr. Hunter shared, not all of the stars line up correctly, which was the case today, where we had some items that required some further discussions. So I think I would like to caution all of us not to develop a mechanical system that basically reduce the transparency and the democratic process that we're using here. And I think we're doing a very good job every time trying to improve. So my long and short is, yes, there's room for improvement, but I like the fact that we have a very engaged board, and yes, once in a while, you heard me saying, can we be a little more brief? But I certainly prefer having a board operating this way than a yes person board. And then lastly, I think we're doing the right thing with the community by being sensitive to certain issues and making the time as needed. So I'd like to thank all my colleagues for their patience and their understanding. And Mr. Harris, you had one more comment?
We should say that we're going to do the we're going to do the TMDL. We're going to defer that to the next.
Yes, we will
next board
defer.
Meeting. Mm-hmm. Secondly, where is the next board meeting going to be held?
I would say we stay with Santa Barbara.
Yep. Okay.
So. Okay. And item 18 is deferred to the next meeting.
So, Chris, you've just earned yourself a trip to Santa Barbara. Congratulations.
And meeting is officially and formally adjourned.